Good day. You're listening to European Buddha.
Good morning and welcome to listen to the third episode of the European Buddha. Today we have a topic that has become quite popular in the Western world, but also it's very central in the Buddhist tradition. Meditation. What is it? Why should we meditate? And how to bring meditation into everyday life. So let's get started. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Emilia.
And my name is Martin. And we have the pleasure to have Martin Bechler with us today. She was a Buddhist nun in Korea for 10 years. She studied Chogye Zen Buddhism under the guidance of Master Kusan Sunim, being ordained as a nun in 1975. She wrote various kinds of books, such as Buddhism and Women, Women in Korean Zen, and also Let Go, a Buddhist guide to breaking free of habits. In these days, she writes articles with a very interesting focus about mindfulness of feeling tones. We will definitely ask her about that. So welcome, Martin Bechler. It's very nice to have you here.
So welcome, and it's very nice to meet you, Martin and Emilia, and to be part of this podcast on meditation.
Wonderful. So let's start to talk about meditation. In these days of the 21st century, everybody has seen a picture of a Buddha, has seen pictures of people meditating, has read about the benefits of a mindful life that can reduce stress, increase compassion, and other qualities. Meditation, at least in my experience, turns out to be a quite personal journey, very direct, and also sometimes a boring experience. So, Martin, I would like to ask you, why should someone start meditation? Or in short, why meditate?
Personally, I would query first the should, because nobody is obliged to meditate. I think this is very important. And of course, someone could decide to start meditating, because of course, as you say, it's everywhere. And of course, it can be very helpful. But I would not say it's helpful for everybody to the same degree. And that's what became very obvious when we did this experiment. This is scientific research backed by the European Commission. And it was to see if meditation could help seniors in France who had never done meditation. And what was interesting in that, in terms of your question, why meditate, was that these people had never meditated. That was one of the conditions. They were all beginners, and they did not choose actually to meditate with us, because it was a scientific study. And so you had these 45 people three times, and the 45 were chosen by a lottery blindly to either be in the meditation group, to be in the learning English group, and to be in the doing nothing group, to check what would be the effect. And what was so fascinating for us was that the first 15 people loved it. And we thought, wow, this is amazing. Meditation works. Because, I mean, they all benefited from it. And they all loved it to a different degree, but they all loved it. Even the one who were not keen to be in the meditation group, they benefited from it. Second 15, 6 months later, new 15, and that was very different. Some people really, really did not take to it. Like 5 people really, really did not take to it. And then the other 10 more or less benefited from it to a certain degree. And then the last 15, third group, more or less they benefited from it to a certain degree, and there was nobody who was really kind of upset by it. So to us, it really showed us what, as a meditation teacher, I found the same. That yes, most of the time, most of the people, it can be helpful, but not to the same degree. It depends on the condition. It depends on your situation. It depends on your interest. So in a way, why meditate? Personally, I would say, before why, how do I meditate? And then why meditating? Because it might be helpful for you. And it might be helpful because in a way, what's the point, I would say, of meditation? Again, you can have two, what I call the short-term goal and the long-term. Short-term, I would say, to help us to dissolve the obstacle and help us to develop wisdom and compassion. Long-term goal, from a Buddhist perspective, could be awakening. So again, why meditate? Do you meditate to awaken? Or do you meditate in a way to dissolve the obstacle to your creative functioning as a human being, flourishing as a human being with wisdom and compassion? So I think, why meditate? I think it's kind of such an open-ended question.
When we mention the topic meditation, we easily get an idea in our heads of Buddha sitting in equanimity and peace. So why is meditation so central in Buddhism?
Why is it central? You could say it's central at one level because it works. You see, this is, I think, the thing. But at the same time, you cannot take the meditation apart from the being in this complex matrix of ethics and wisdom. But in terms of meditation itself, it's very interesting. Where does it come from, meditation, in terms of Buddhism? It comes from the fact that one day the Buddha sat and he could see, he had all this thought, kind of really terrible, negative thought. And he thought, can I do something about this? And so he thought, I'm trying to meditate. I have all these terrible thoughts, which I'm not really kind of meditating in the way I want to meditate. What can I do? And then he realized he could train his mind. Either actually things are conditional, things are impermanent, which means we can change them to some degree. And so basically what is interesting with the meditation is not about stopping thought and sitting there for hours, but the main effect of meditation is the fact that we come back again and again and again. And then through that coming back in a kind of friendly manner, because the attitude is as important of what we do is how we do it, then by coming back again and again, we basically dissolving the habituation, bring it back to the creative functioning, and then that we can have a different kind of relationship with ourselves, with the world.
One key experience of the Buddha was that he encountered old age, sickness, and death, and started to question, is that all to this life? He was born into a rich family and never had these questions. And I was also reminded of our previous episodes. We spoke about impermanence and death and that the world is changing. People are dying in these times. How do you experience these times of pandemic, and was meditation a good tool for you?
So when the pandemic started, like in March last year, when the confinement started, because we had a hard confinement in France, and I realized immediately that all my meditation had in a way prepared me for it, to in a way creatively engage with it. So as soon as it happens, in a way I I had, in a way, I thought of different cultivation. The first cultivation I thought of was not to be busy. Because in a way, I felt the pandemic asked us to do nothing. And this is actually so hard for us because we're so associated with working, with acting. And here we were asked not to do anything, stay home, protect others, stay home. And I saw on top of it for myself, where I can have a tendency to be busy, I thought, I do not need to be busy. I do not need to stress. So that became my practice. The second one was appreciation for essential workers. So for me, I had this mudita, which is one of the practices in Buddhism, appreciative joy, altruistic joy, is actually to appreciate all these people who made the electricity still working, to the water in the supermarket, everywhere, and to be so grateful for them. But also when I encounter them, to really make a point of being friendly. And then the third thing I decided as a cultivation was that we become habituated in our relationships. And I decided, can this be an opportunity to revisit relationship in a more creative way, in a way to be more patient, to be more understanding, to just let go of back history, if one has resentment or whatever, can you just let it go and really connect to the person right now?
You were quite young when you moved to England and after that to Thailand and later Korea. If you look back at that time, what made you leave home and leave the ordinary life at home to become a nun in Korea? How was the life as a nun?
You have to see, I had possibly a strange personality, but from a young age, from 11 years old, I wanted to travel. I wanted to leave home, not because my parents were not nice. I had very nice family, very nice, supportive parents, very loving. But from a young age, I wanted to travel. I wanted to save people, save the world, like kind of a little bit of grandiose idea. And then, you know, like I wanted to become, you know, save the world, president of the republic, and then maybe kind of MP, and then maybe journalist, all kind of political idea of saving the world. And then I read the book of the Buddha, the Dhammapada. And in the Dhammapada, the Buddha says at one point, before you change others, you must be able to change yourself. And I thought, this is so true. I'm kind of, you know, thinking of changing others, but if I cannot change myself. And so I realized I could tell myself, don't be egoist, don't be jealous. It had no effect whatsoever. So in a way, I left politics to be more interested in meditation. And then I went to travel. And then along my travel, by accident a little bit, I ended up in Korea. And when I got to Korea, I had this wonderful meeting, which you could say changed my life, because I ended up at the big ceremony in this temple in Southwest Korea. And this woman, I was cleaning vegetable with her. And she said, we could kind of talk a little bit in English. And she said, oh, are you married? Do you have children? Are you studying? Have you got a job? I said, no. And she said, oh, if I was in your situation, I would become a nun. And I thought, maybe this is a good idea. And I could see I was repeating the same mistake again and again, causing the same suffering again and again. And I thought, well, maybe if I become a nun, I could learn meditation. Who knows, I could learn calligraphy. Maybe I can even learn Tai Chi. I did not learn Tai Chi. I did not learn calligraphy. But I learned meditation, and it was so good, such a wonderful place to do that, that I stayed for 10 years.
That's beautiful. And then you came back and You're a meditation teacher, so we brought it to us here.
I learned. You see, this is what was interesting for me, that to be a nun in Korea was such a fantastic training in terms of ethics, in terms of meditation, in terms of wisdom. But it was, in a way, you could say narrow. In terms of the condition was relatively narrow, because as a monastic, you're quite protected. You don't earn your living. Ethically, it's kind of easy, you know, in many different ways. And so when I stopped being a nun, two things happened. One thing, which was a great lesson for me, is to realize that all my life I had wanted to be special. And when I was a nun, I was the most special I ever been in my life. And then when I went back to being a lay person, I was like everybody else. And to realize the beauty of being ordinary, I think for me, this was a big breakthrough. The beauty of just, I'm ordinary. Nobody noticed me. It's okay. And the second thing was about earning my living. To me, this was very interesting, earning my living and also relationship. Kind of, I married my husband and being in a romantic relationship in a way. I mean, I did not do this for 10 years. So again, that was very interesting to bring the practice to all this.
What would you say is the difference between mindfulness practice or meditation in a monastery and in your everyday life? Is there a difference?
Yes and no. You see, in personally, I think with the meditation, we are at the crossroad of two dimensions. One dimension is the depth dimension, and one dimension is the width dimension. So that will be a monastic, a monastic in a temple where they do meditation, because you have monastic who are not into meditation. I mean, they can be into chanting, they can be into serving. But let's say you are in a monastery where they do meditation, because in Korea, you did it 6 months a year, 10 hours a day. So it was kind of like, you could say, intense training. But you can also be in terms of in the world, that it be in the East or in Asia, as a lay person, you can go on a 10-day retreat or a month-long retreat or a 7-day retreat, silent retreat. And again, this would be like intense, but very specific condition. You're generally in silence. Everything is more or less done for you. And so you are in very specific condition. And then because of those conditions, the silence, being together, meditating, a strong schedule, then in a way you can experience a certain depth of the practice, a certain calm, a certain clarity. But this is not the whole of the practice. The practice is also the width, being in daily life, earning our living, being in relationship, having difficulty, all kind of dealing with that. And having a deep calm in meditation, in a retreat, or in a monastery is not the same as having a deep calm in the middle of difficulty. So personally, I would say it's a different perseverance. It's a different patience. But both need to be practiced to a certain degree.
If one wants to practice this mind muscle and start meditating, maybe there's a thought in the mind, I should meditate, but I don't have time enough or I don't have will enough. How would you support that kind of person?
So you could do 5 minutes, 3 times a day. But also in term, I mean, that's why I would say mindfulness meditation is so popular, because it's relatively easy to do. You don't need candle. You don't need a cushion. Mindfulness practice, you can just do it sitting in the bath. You can do it when you go to the bathroom. You can do it when you wash the dishes. I would say the most difficult place to do mindfulness practice is when you watch TV. And when you're on social media, because as soon as you have the screen, it's like you've taken over. But outside of TV and social media, I think you can easily do it in the way you listen to people, the way you work. So yes, in terms of what I call formal practice, you could just do 5 minutes here and there. But the easiest way to meditate daily is when you're lying down in bed, when you go to sleep. You can do 5 minutes. You wake up in the middle of the night. You can again do meditation instead of worrying about not sleeping. Just back to the breath.
One interesting focus I mentioned earlier is your focus about mindfulness of feeling tones. This sounds very interesting. Could you say something about that?
So one of the things that interested me, and that's why I wrote Let Go, A Buddhist Guide to Breaking Free of Habits, is that after I've been teaching for a while, I realized people generally did not have problem doing meditation. They could do meditation on retreat. Most of the time it was helpful for people. No problem there. But what I could see, people have difficulty with their habits. Like, yes, they could meditate. Yes, they could feel calmness and clarity, some wisdom and compassion. But it was harder to translate into daily life. And what seemed to be the difficulty was the habituation, our automatic reaction. Like, you know, somebody said something or you see something and then you kind of caught. Why are we moving from creative functioning to habituation? And I realized a major trigger of habits actually was tonality. A lot of the time, it's unpleasant tonality. And what is interesting is to notice the change, because I could notice this within myself. So I was sitting in meditation looking for tonality, when actually it was neither pleasant nor unpleasant. It was more neutral. And then I discovered neutral, which again is a very interesting topic. Then I became in daily life, started to be more aware of the pleasant tonality, the unpleasant tonality. I started to see more, kind of tonality is very connected, of course, with contact and perception. The perception is key also with tonality. And then I started to notice a lot of it is due to unpleasant tonality. And how do we creatively engage with pleasant tonality? But before we can creatively engage, we need to be aware of it. And then from there, I kind of like started to look at the text, then finding this wonderful text, the 108 Vedanas. So the text on the 108 tonalities. And that was such a beautiful text. But we don't have the time to go into that one.
Would you like to share a practice with us?
What kind of practice? Like practice of tonality?
Like a small little practice that we could share with the listeners.
What we can do actually is we can do like a little short mindfulness of the body and the breath with a little bit of mudita, and then we can see a little bit with tonality. Let's see if we can do this. Okay. So if we find a comfortable posture, the back is straight, the shoulders are open and relaxed. We try to sit here or lie down and feel as grounded as a mountain and also as open as the ocean. And then gently we can bring our attention to the breath. Feeling the air coming a little colder through the nostril and coming out a little warmer at body temperature. not forcing the breath, just letting the breath happen. We can also look deeply into the breath and ask ourselves, what is this breath? What is this air that I breathe? Realizing we breathe the same air with everything that is alive. So coming back to the breath, coming back to a deep connection with everything that breathes. Then we can bring our attention to our hands. Our hands touching each other or touching the sides, experiencing that sensation of contact of the hands on each other or on the sides. What's the tonality of that experience, of that contact? Very likely neither pleasant nor unpleasant. Just experiencing that. Now we can bring our attention to our feet. Maybe touching the ground. Being aware of that part of the body. But also, can we appreciate that we have feet? Can we rejoice, be grateful that we have feet? Or in any other part of the body that we have, we can be grateful for. Thank you for your practice.
Thank you for your guidance. Emilia, how about you? Do you know why you should meditate?
I meditate because I feel like it gets me closer to reality. That simply. That's how I feel.
Yeah, as I was doing the exercise, I really enjoy the sensation of feeling complete. And I really like that. With my feet. I have feet. Yeah, I'm forgetting about that. So thank you, Martin.
Thank you, Martin, so much.
Thank you. Keep well. And all the best for the people who listen to the podcast. Please go well in your life. And practice as you can, if it suits you.